the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. I'm Len. I'll be doing this one solo. Joey is taking the night off. I'm not sure if he's playing football, but he's definitely doing something else that's not Bitcoin related. But before we go any further, we got a couple of good gents we want to bring in to talk about Blockware Solutions. I want to talk about our sponsor. We have actually two sponsors. Number one, we have EasyDNS. Now, if you have a business and you need domain services, hosting services, email hosting services, anything along those lines, Nipo5 even, they have the ability to provide you with those services. Check them out. EasyDNS is a great place to buy anything along those lines. If you use our promo code CBPMedia, 50% off your initial purchase. Somebody I know just recently got a domain name and did so, and it was a seamless and great process. Also, you have the ability to pay in Bitcoin. So check them out. It's a great place to do. We're doing our own website using their services as well. We're kind of delinquent in terms of getting that out the door, but it will be done relatively soon. And we also have a second sponsor, which is Bull Bitcoin. And that was an interesting time when we announced it. We had Francis on the show. And the good thing about Bull, aside from the typical buys and sell your Bitcoin, you're non-custodial. You could also buy gift cards over there with your Bitcoin, pay your bills. But they have the big thing here, the KYC-free Bitcoin. And you could use Canada Post to buy your Bitcoin. So it's interesting that they're using that avenue in order to procure or have you procure some KYC-free Bitcoin. And if you have any questions on how the whole process is, I did a video on this not too long ago. Check it out. It's on our YouTube page. And if you have any questions specifically, you can just reach out to myself or Joey. But without that being said, just want to bring in the two guests. We have Danny and Blake from Blockware Solutions. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Len, all good. Appreciate you having us on.
It's a pleasure, my friend. So before we dive into anything, I just want to ask you, you know, your Bitcoin journey. How did you end up getting into Bitcoin and coming to where you are right now? We'll start with this one alphabetically. So Blake, normally Danny would be first. D is a pretty early letter in the alphabet, but Blake, unfortunately, got your beat. So Blake, on to you. Tell me about your Bitcoin journey.
Yeah, no, good question. I'm relatively newer to the Bitcoin space. You know, been in it for about 3 years or so. I guess I have a similar story to some people. Kind of took the COVID path of nothing to do. I decided to dive into markets. I'm younger than a lot of people in the space. I'm 22. I just graduated college about a month ago. So I was home. You know, they sent everyone home from college. I had nothing to do. I spent all my time learning about markets. So I kind of started off, you know, learning about kind of the TradFi market space. I'm into, you know, swing trading and in growth investing and things like that, which ultimately led me down kind of that Bitcoin rabbit hole. Spent a lot of my time, you know, charting and posting analysis on Twitter, which kind of gained up a, you know, small but modest following there. And, you know, one thing led to another. And I, you know, ended up working at Blockware Solutions for the last about 2 years or so, mostly doing macro analysis and kind of the, tie between the macro space and the, you know, traditional finance space and how that, you know, rolls into Bitcoin and ultimately into Bitcoin mining. So now I kind of have a combo role. I do sales at Blockware as well. I'm an account executive and also, you know, continue to do macro and Bitcoin analysis.
Very cool. Danny, over to you.
Yeah. So I've got a few years or at least a decade on Blake in age. My story just in short is, 2016 or 2017, kind of just like number go up. What's this thing? This is interesting. Take a gamble without doing much research. And then it was really in 2020, right about the COVID time. So, you know, kind of like novice understanding, you know, initially, but then I think, you know, 2020 when I saw, and I can actually pinpoint the exact moment in time. I was at my in-laws in Florida, driving back to Chicago where I lived at the time, and they had just canceled the NCAA tournament. And I was like, all right, this is going to be an impact. That followed then by, you know, a short, you know, major macroeconomic, you know, kind of uncertainty period, followed by a lot of money printing, right? And so I was like, just kind of had the epiphany. This is, when you print this much money, there has to be an implication, right? And at that time, I was doing a lot of trading, you know, thought I was a genius, just basically going long into like tech earnings, you know, well out of the money the day before earnings. And I was like, I'm going to retire and I'm the best trader of all time. And I actually started trading a lot of the Bitcoin mining stocks and then started following, you know, Saylor, seeing a lot of the information that was out in the, you know, just out in the open at that point in time when I feel like a lot of content was being generated. But really, our you know, my colleague and our CEO at Blockware, Mason Jappa, whom I worked with in a previous life, he and I just kind of jammed on this and started trading, you know, like Riot blockchain at the time, Riot Platforms now, and then just been dollar cost averaging. And that led me into mining, which I think is the best way to dollar cost average. So I'd say like 2017 stumbled in because I thought I could make a bunch of money. And then 2020, I realized what money is and, you know, realized that Bitcoin is, you know, the solution to a lot of the global challenges that we see. So I'm kind of a, you know, official 2020 with a, you know, unofficial 2017, 2016, 2017 entry.
Your story mirrors mine almost to a T, except I joined in late 2017. So the similarities are eerie. When you were doing your trading in the better parts of 2020 for, you know, you're getting into the Riot and those all those tech companies, were you one of those Wall Street bet guys that were checking out that Reddit subreddit and laughing and also partaking in some of the advice there?
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I was like, so at the time I was running sales at a software as a service, you know, company that I was on the, you know, one of the early employees who grew it, built it big and so on and so forth. And working from home, like everybody, you know, thought I was an excellent trader, watched CNBC, you know, streaming in the background constantly. And it was just like, look at what's happening with, you know, GameStop, right? And yeah, then I saw, you know, it crashed for a minute. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to go buy a bunch of this. Went up and, you know, I did pretty well on that. But, awesome. You know, it was like making some gambles in the time when gambling was actually an effective strategy.
It was a wild time to be long on just about anything. So, exactly. But I want to talk more about Blockware solutions. And I'm going to throw it over to you, Blake. Give us a rundown of the history of the company, what you do, and maybe the customers you're trying to serve, because a lot of our listeners may not have heard of it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, this is a good one also for, you know, Danny to kind of piggyback on here as well. But, you know, Blockware has been around for a while. We've been around since 2017, you know, kind of similar timeline to you guys in the Bitcoin mining space. But, you know, our executive team has mining experience going back, you know, way back in the day, 2013 or so. And, you know, I think one of the things that's been interesting about Blockware of recent is historically we tailor to this institutional crowd. And I guess I should backtrack. So we do a lot of different things. We're a vertically integrated mining company. So we do everything from the top level of research, which is kind of where, you know, my role traditionally was, all the way down to owning and operating Bitcoin mines, you know, big data centers located in the United States. So everything you can imagine in between, you know, co-located hosting, between, you know, brokering rigs, you know, just kind of what we call hardware only deals. Blockware just kind of does it all. I think, you know, we've really made a name for ourselves in the space from our research. But aside from that, you know, what most people might not know is Blockware is the largest, you know, Bitcoin miner brokerage in the United States. And Blockware kind of brought the mining as a service business model to North America, which has, you know, grown super popular. And there's now, you know, a ton of players in this space. But like I mentioned, we kind of started off as this institutional client base and tailoring towards high net worth individuals, financial institutions, you know, large miners as well. And now we've kind of narrowed that, or I guess broadened that customer base to kind of be geared a lot towards the retail client as well. Danny, what would you add?
Yeah, just so you know, in brief, like our core business is vertically integrated Bitcoin mining as a service, which sounds like a total word salad. So to unpack that a little bit, we sell Bitcoin mining rigs. We basically enable capital efficient mining, right? So we sell Bitcoin mining rigs to individual and institutional investors. We provide co-location, you know, hosting services. And now, you know, really one thing that's shaken up the industry is our marketplace, which we can, you know, talk about a little bit. But a couple of kernels of like historical knowledge that I think are interesting. One, this company was founded, you know, on the back of just eliminating counterparty risk to get Bitcoin mining rigs to the US, right? It was just eliminating counterparty risk, where at the time, you're pretty much just like wiring money into the black hole of China or buying stuff on eBay and just crossing your fingers and hoping your stuff shows up, right? So I was like, okay, cool. This could be a business, right? And then I think we really like to say we invented, you know, Bitcoin mining as a service, you know, 2017 kind of timeframe, where we were brokering Bitcoin mining rig deals into third-party co-located hosted facilities, right? So we would sell Lynn, who wants to buy 10 Bitcoin, or Len, sorry, 10 Bitcoin mining rigs, but he doesn't want to build a data center or, you know, have the operational responsibility there. But we would broker that into a partnered facility. Then when we saw, you know, about 2021, when we saw, you know, raging bull market, a lot of companies going public via reverse merger, SPAC, you know, capital markets were super frothy, you know, easy access to capital, you know, the glory days, if you will. you know, we were like, hey, there's not enough infrastructure, power, you know, just supply. And we were in a pinch supply chain. So we made the strategic decision at that point to go long, and it was an expensive decision, to build our own data center so we could eliminate a layer of counterparty risk, right? So for the last 2 years-ish, right, we've been basically running a vertically integrated business, enabling capital-efficient Bitcoin mining for individuals and institutions. And now we're actually kind of going partially to a capital-efficient model, which is fueled by our marketplace, because our vision is Bitcoin mining rigs are ultimately like the world's best commodity. You know, it's a commodity, things will commoditize. So enabling folks to buy and sell rigs and trade them while constantly throwing off a, you know, Bitcoin denominated, you know, positive dividend is kind of our strategy, right? So just piggybacking on Blake, a little bit of history on how we got here and where we're going. And, you know, 2017 to 2023, there's been a lot of variables. It's been a fun and interesting and at times challenging, but always rewarding ride.
And it's going to continue the change moving forward too. We have the halving coming next year and all these new entrants that may be entering into the Bitcoin mining game. And I want to talk about that later in the show. But before we go any further, your data centers that you've been mentioning, where is it, one central location or spread out in multiple locations? That's number one. Number two, what's the power draw on that? What's the capacity? And is it at capacity for draw? Is it fully utilized? And what type of power generated, what type of power is being used? Is it generated from nuclear or from something else? I mean, I want to hear more about these data centers.
Yeah, I can take that one real quick. And then Blake, if you have anything you can add. So we have two wholly owned and operated data centers that operate in Eastern Kentucky, which is the Appalachian, you know, semi kind of mountainous, very beautiful, very rural region. And then we also work with one co-location provider that's based in Washington State. Right. We have a little bit of, you know, capacity available at our Kentucky sites. We always try to keep a little bit available, you know, as customers sometimes build their own facilities, move out, or contracts end, or, you know, hardware, you know, reaches end of life. So we do have space available, you know, currently. And then we also have a lot of rigs available via our marketplace, which we can talk about, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit as well. But I think, just give you some context on why we chose Kentucky. And if you think about it, so in the US, there's a concept of, you know, regulated or deregulated energy markets, right? And if you look at like Texas, for example, that's a deregulated spot price oriented power market, where you're just, you know, buying, you know, power at market, you know, dictated rates at all times. So for our business, right, like if I'm just trying to build the biggest self-mining operation of all time, you know, maybe I want to build in a deregulated market because I can get access to super cheap power. But without hedging, I accept the responsibility that 2022 might come in and, like, you know, energy prices go crazy and then I get blown out. And that's, you know, largely there's a lot of debt in the system, but a lot of the bankruptcies you saw last year and, you know, especially the mining space were actually just a byproduct of like surging power rates, right? So for us, because mining is all about mitigating risk, right? Like if everybody could just buy Bitcoin at a discount to the spot value of what you could otherwise buy Bitcoin, you know, on exchange or wherever, you would just do that, right? But in order to, you know, get that opportunity, you take a little bit of execution risk, so to speak. So we chose to operate in Kentucky, which is a, you know, state that has very friendly, you know, geopolitical landscape, is very welcoming to miners. We're helping invigorate, you know, reinvigorate an economy that was largely based on, you know, coal mining, which is kind of a dying industry. So we're creating jobs and, you know, opportunities, and we do, you know, receive tax incentives to do that. So it's a mutually beneficial, you know, loop there, right? So we chose to operate there because it's more stable, it's regulated, it's got friendly geo, you know, political landscape. And you asked about the power mix. So it's grid power. It's the PJM grid. It's an extremely transparent grid, one of the biggest power grids in the United States. You know, a lot of natural gas, a good bit of, you know, nuclear as well. You know, good mix of renewables, a little bit of coal that's kind of generally, you know, being sunset, but coal pricing went crazy up last year. So, you know, everything's an efficient market. And if a commodity is significantly more valuable than it was, then people start, you know, using it, right? So bit of a speech, but that's how we ended up in Kentucky. And it's about mitigating risk so that our customers can succeed.
The Eastern Kentucky site sounds like there's no issues there. Right? There's the geopolitical landscape, as you mentioned, seems to be just the right mix for a Bitcoin mining company to move in and operate a data center. But the one in Washington State, I mean, on the surface, it looks like to me, and I don't have all the information available, it looks like that may be one that could be impacted. The political climate over there may not be more adopting of Bitcoin mining operations just to the sheer power that's required. Is there any potential rugging going on over there that you could foresee? Because that's the one thing I look at. And Compass Mining, we've had a few of, you know, a few challenging times by them in the past couple of years. I'm wondering if Washington State may be something maybe that could be problematic moving forward, or is that just in my eyes, it just, you know, I'm just looking at it the wrong way.
It's not unfair, you know, to look at it that way for certain. And it's, I mean, I very much believe that Bitcoin is apolitical and so on and so forth. But like, you know, blue states in the United States are going to be less advantageous at face value if you look at it statistically than, you know, red states. But Washington's a unique state where they have a significant amount of, for example, hydropower, right? So at the end of the day, and, you know, this is not terribly different than, you know, in Canada with, you know, different sovereign power that, you know, different provinces have like in the States. It's like, you know, there is excess power. There is renewable power from a hydro perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that is a significant job creation mechanism. You know, it's a significant tax, you know, revenue generation opportunity. So while one could maybe think like, yeah, there could be.
Uh-oh, did we lose Danny?
Looks like he cut out there, yeah.
Uh-oh. Do you want to add anything to what he was saying or finish his sentence? I'm going to pass it over to you.
Yeah, no,
Difficult position to be in, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just kind of piggybacking off what Danny said, and I don't know if I could necessarily say it better myself. Oh, there he is. but yeah, I mean, you know, Bitcoin mining politically comes with risk. And of course, you know, when you depending on which state you're in, you have varying levels of risk. But, you know, like Danny was, you know, right in the middle of explaining, right, we see that the benefits of Bitcoin mining to the power grid is something that, you know, over time are going to attract states to, you know, be remotely more, you know, fairly, you know, friendly to bringing on miners and job creation and balancing energy grids and all those things are areas that we see as, you know, room for improvement in certain states, and in certain states already it's already, you know, well underway.
Okay. Well said. I think that you guys are one of the things you want to talk about, and it's something that's very exciting, is the Blockware marketplace. And I want to dive deep into this because it's something that's going to, as you mentioned before, it may change the mining as a service game, and talk about it. I want to hear a little bit more about this, because this appears to be one of your more exciting products that you're bringing to the market.
For sure. Yeah, I can go over it. And I think, you know, just broadly speaking, I think it just kind of changes for a retail and, you know, institutional investor alike, or, you know, retail or institutional miner alike. I think it just completely changes just mining, period, and what exactly mining looks like as the investor, you know, as the individual. So, you know, broadly speaking, taking a step back, the Blockware marketplace is a Lightning integrated, Lightning enabled platform that operates fully on chain. So how it works is, currently at the moment, all of the rigs listed on there are located at our facility in Eastern Kentucky. So you can go on there and you can view all of the listings. There's a ton of different types of machines, you know, all the way down to the, you know, the M30S, all the way up to, you know, XP Pro Plus, things like that. So these are all rigs that are currently up and hashing at our facility in Eastern Kentucky, listed for sale by the current owner of that machine. So, you know, one question I get a lot is like, you know, oh, like, you know, why is this machine listed at this price? Why is this machine listed at this price? It's like, this is a marketplace. This isn't Blockware saying, hey, we want to sell an S19J Pro at $1,500. This is a client saying, you know, based off of their current attitude towards the investment that they have, based off their cost basis, based off of what they see in the market, hey, I want to list this machine for sale at this price. So how it works is the client goes on, lists something for sale. These are all located at our facility in Eastern Kentucky. The buyer goes on there, chooses a rig that they'd like to purchase, hits buy. It operates, you know, through the Bitcoin blockchain. So it, you know, occurs with a on-chain transaction that transfers the ownership of that hard asset, the ASIC, from seller to buyer. Danny, like, how would you broadly kind of explain the marketplace in a, you know, more elegant fashion?
You know, I thought you did a great, I mean, I think you're spot on. Let me give it a little bit different perspective. So almost like from an investment thesis perspective, as you look at mining, and then you look at mining with the optionality that the marketplace provides. So if you think about, you know, mining Bitcoin, you know, the investment thesis is you have a CapEx upfront to go buy the rigs, to buy the hardware, right? And it's, if you take Bitcoin out of, you take whatever it is, it's just look at it from a traditional investment perspective. It's like you have this like long CapEx lockup period. And then that gives you the opportunity to constantly or perpetually, you know, dollar cost average, and you're, you know, theoretically making Bitcoin. I'm just kind of trying to, you know, make this very simple, at a price that is less than the price at which you could buy Bitcoin on the open market, right? Because all you're doing is you're taking in electricity as the cost mechanism. And this is one of the beautiful things about Bitcoin, with the difficulty adjustment and that whole just beautiful artistic part of the design of Bitcoin. It's like, there's going to be economic incentives to mine Bitcoin, or you won't mine Bitcoin, right? So the way to traditionally look at Bitcoin mining is you got a long CapEx period, CapEx lockup period, and then you have like a 2 to 3 year, or, you know, 18 month, it varies, right? Based on market dynamics, you know, CapEx recovery period via the profits that you get from mining Bitcoin, right? Now, and then, you know, the out years are gravy. And if you're hodling your Bitcoin, then that goes way up and it looks like a killer investment. And, you know, historically, in any prolonged period, we can look back in time, it has outperformed just buying Bitcoin or dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin. Now, what it does is it significantly, it does not. So what you're getting is you're buying a, you know, dividend paying asset, right? Now, we get the dividend part, that's the Bitcoin, but it discounts the fact that the rig itself has a spot value, right? I mean, and we can see, we saw S19J Pros go from, you know, $2,000 when they came out to peak at like $13,000, $14,000, $15,000 US dollars, sorry, just for it to be specific, late 2021. And now they're like $1,500, $2,000 again. So if I bought, you know, at any point in time, like in my, you know, asset appreciated significantly, but I don't have liquidity, it's just a nice paper gain, right? There's nothing you can do about that. It's like, cool, like this rig that I have that I can't do anything with, you know, is theoretically worth a lot more money that I can't go get, right? So what the Bitcoin, what the Blockware marketplace does is, number one, I mean, I think in to simplify it, it provides, it solves three major market challenges, mining, traditional mining investment thesis challenges. Number one is transparency. So every rig on the marketplace is plugged in turnkey hashing at our facility, right? So not all rigs are created equal. These are 30-pound, you know, computers, right? Servers that are cranking all the time. So, you know, fans break, you get some duds out of the box. That's just the reality. It's always going to be the reality is that, like, you know, hardware is not perpetually, you know, viable, and you're going to get some variability. So the transparency side is you can see, you know, what's the historical hash rate of this rig? What does the up and down time look like? How long has it been online? What's the serial number? It sounds kind of basic if you're not familiar with mining and you're used to like buying stuff on Amazon.com. You're like, yeah, isn't that a given? It's not a given in this space, right? So transparency is huge. Second one is lead times, right? Like these machines are all born in Asia, basically. There's two major manufacturers. So, and the way the market works is it's 100% payment, you know, on the CapEx. So for the rigs up front. And then you got to wait, you know, right now the supply chain is not condensed. There's a pretty good supply of rigs. Lead times are pretty short, but even if it's, you know, 3 weeks or so, or a month, you know, in 2021, early 2022, people were buying like 4 or 5 month future deals to pay up front for, right? So time is money, because if you can plug that in and eliminate your 2 week or 2 month or, you know, 6 month lead time, you're generating revenue, you're generating profit, and you're lowering your, you know, cost basis, and you're starting to get a return on your investment. So with the marketplace, there's no lead time effectively, right? You are buying a rig that is turnkey hashing, and time is money, right? So that's big. And then the third, and this is what I'm like, I think the first two are epic. And we did a survey on Twitter a couple months ago, and it was like 33% for each one of these of what's your favorite feature. My personal favorite feature is the fact that I have instant liquidity on that rig, theoretically, right? Like now I can go on, and I'm a, you know, I'm a chief revenue officer at Blockware Solutions, but I'm also a customer of Blockware Solutions. I'm a Bitcoin miner, right? So I buy machines, and I historically I'm looking at like, okay, you know, 2-3 years, this looks great. I love dollar cost averaging. I'm doing it at a discount. Like I love the inherent investment thesis with mining. But now I can go and say, okay, I'm just going to set a 20, 30, 40%, you know, premium to my buy price as a bid, you know, as an ask for my machine. And if somebody buys it, great. If nobody buys it, I'm buying Bitcoin. That's great too. But if somebody buys it, and this is kind of the coolest part, and Blake was alluding to it, it's a circular economy. I get paid in Bitcoin when I sell that rig, and it makes a on-chain or Lightning Enable, which is on-chain, you know, transaction, which, you know, in a manifested scale, like that adds to miner revenue, right? So I'll say one more thing and then I'll shut up here.
No, keep rolling downhill, man. This is yours to talk about.
Like with mining, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get a disproportionate return on your capital investment denominated in Bitcoin as fast as possible. Right? That's kind of like what you're trying to do. Otherwise, just go buy Bitcoin. You know, it's really easy. You can click a button, but you're trying to get, you know, the best return you can as fast as possible denominated in Bitcoin. So if I can buy rigs, mine Bitcoin, lower my dollar cost average, and let's say that it would take me 2-3 years to get to 30-40% like flat market return. I'm taking out the fact that we all think that Bitcoin is coiled and, you know, going to have a great future on a, you know, dollarized, you know, priced basis, right? But just let's remove that variable. It would take me 2-3 years, right, to get my 30% return back on my investment. Now, if I can get that 30% return by a combination of, you know, listing my rig where there's a premium for, you know, buying turnkey, having this transparency, you know, and maybe some of that is manifested by the fact that I'm constantly lowering my cost basis because I'm mining Bitcoin. If I can get to my target 30, 40, 50, whatever my percent, you know, target return is in 3 months or 3 weeks or 8 months or anything better than 2-3 years, and it's denominated in Bitcoin, that's better, right? So that's where the marketplace is just shaking up everything, because you still get to mine Bitcoin. Your baseline strategy is the same, but now you've got effectively this like pull your ROI forward option, but not obligation. And wait till we see like some positive price action, which I think is kind of around the corner, is then you get to see like these rig prices appreciate like crazy, and rigs are cheap right now. So it's a, I don't know, Blake, I'm going to pass it back to you, and Len, I'm going to stop talking now, but
no, man.
Yeah.
No problems. Keep going. But yeah, Blake, I want to hear your thoughts too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree with Danny. I think like from a capital management perspective, the liquidity is immensely important, right? Having asset side liquidity is something that was never really an option in Bitcoin mining, right? If you had ASICs and you decided for whatever reason, maybe you wanted to capitalize on the appreciation of hardware. Maybe you decided, ooh, I don't want to be mining anymore. You know, you saw the market turning in 2021, whatever the case is, there was never really an option to sell your rigs unless you're going to go like list them on eBay, or you're going to come to someone like Blockware, who's got to go out and find a buyer for your rigs. Mm-hmm. And it takes time. And there's no guarantee that we find someone who wants to buy your rigs at your price, whatever the case is, there was never really the option of having asset side liquidity. But in my personal perspective, I think the biggest issue that the Blockware marketplace is solving is counterparty risk. And we talked about it earlier when Blockware 2 years ago went out and built our own data centers, and we were trying to minimize counterparty risk for our clients. I think counterparty risk is the biggest issue in the entire crypto industry, let alone, you know, Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. And obviously 2022 is a huge eye opener to this. You know, hosting providers obviously had some issues, there a few of them, you know, not to name names. And then you look at, you know, FTX, and you look at, you know, all these, you know, Binance having issues, yeah, whatever the case is, counterparty risk is a ginormous issue. So I think, you know, the liquidity option ties into counterparty risk for this idea that, you know, you have the option to exit your hosting contract at any time by listing your rig for sale and finding a buyer, versus, you know, going to a potentially sketchy hosting provider, signing a, you know, 3-5 year hosting contract, and then something happens, and then, you know, you're stuck, you know, you lost, whatever. You know, versus Blockware Marketplace, you say, hey, maybe you had the magic crystal ball that everyone's looking for. And in, you know, November 2021, you're like, oh my God, the market's about to take a huge dive. I want to get out of Bitcoin mining. You know, assuming the marketplace was around then, which it wasn't, but you would have had the option to, you know, list your rig for sale and effectively get out of your mining contract. I think the other side of it is this idea of transparency that Danny talked to, which, you know, like he mentioned, isn't something that sounds super fancy. It kind of sounds like a no-brainer. But like Danny mentioned, that this is not something that existed in the industry prior to us rolling out the marketplace in April, where you can go online on the marketplace, click on a listing, see the serial number of, I think, well, first and foremost, the serial number of the rig is, I think, super cool to see. You can go on the Bitmain, you know, website, or the, you know, MicroBT website or whatever, and punch in the serial number of your machine, see how much warranty is left on this machine, you know, see when this thing was manufactured. And then you can also see there's an online since date there. So you can see this specific rig, the one you're looking at with this serial number, was plugged in at Blockware's data center on whatever, March 14th, 2023 at 7 p.m. Like, what other hosting provider is providing you with that kind of transparency on the exact machine you're buying? There's none of them. So I think, you know, that also, you know, brings down a level of counterparty risk. And it's this idea of, you know, those two factors, the liquidity and the transparency on machine performance and serial number and things like that, combined with the fact that, you know, all of these rigs listed on there at the moment are from, you know, are currently hashing at our data center in Kentucky that we own and operate. So I think the issue with a lot of other hosting providers is that using, you know, third-party co-located facilities, and not necessarily that there's an issue with that if there's a, you know, agreed upon level of due diligence that occurs, but unfortunately across the industry that doesn't always occur, right? And 2022 is obviously, you know, made that pretty obvious. but like it's this idea of like compounding counterparty risk, right? When you don't know the machine you're buying, you don't really know where they're, you know, where they're holding it. You don't really know who's operating it. That's like three layers of counterparty risk mm-hmm. compounded on each other is massive. So this idea is that, you know, Blockware's run by a bunch of Bitcoiners. Like, you know, we're all, you know, Bitcoiners. We believe in the full, you know, ethos that is Bitcoin. And this idea of trying to, you know, store your wealth in a place that's secure that only you can control. So this idea of counterparty risk scares the shit out of most Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoiners, and it scares the shit out of us too. So the whole idea is, you know, if you're going to be in hosting and you don't have the means of running a data center by yourself, which 99.9% of people don't, you might as well do it at a place that is actively trying to minimize counterparty risk.
Yeah, no, well said. And the transparency is key. And especially when you're dealing with somebody that to host your equipment and to service it and so forth, it's very important to ensure that all the information is provided. Now, for those that are wondering what's the website, if you go to blockwaresolutions.com, on there in the top, you click on Marketplace, you could see what we're talking about. There's the whole list of the equipment that's currently available for sale, and you could do it in both Bitcoin or US dollars, depending on how you want to denominate this. But if you actually click on one of the links, like, so for example, the first one, it shows up an Antminer S19J Pro, and I click on it, it shows, as you mentioned, the serial number, the hashing rate when it was plugged in between this case, June to June 8 till now. So you actually get an idea what's the hash rate of this. So it's really cool. You can see the information related to this specific rig, and you have this for everyone that is listed on there, which is really, really cool. Now, I'm going to give you a scenario. I'm a customer. I come in, I purchase one of these, and I want the whole nine yards. I want the transparency is there, and I got that from purchasing it. I want the turnkey operated, and I want to not deal with anything. I want this hashing out right away. Say down the line, 6 months, a year, 1 month, whatever the heck it may be, something happens, it breaks. What does the client do, and what's the process to have this rectified and serviced?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, and this is like, again, it goes to the transparency aspect. So we are a service provider effectively, right? We're not a manufacturer, but we're always, you know, we're self-miners as well. So just kind of point blank. And it's important to understand, like, over a 5-year lifespan of a machine, there's going to be some, you know, minor setbacks, like a fan might break. You know, you may have a hashboard that gets, you know, something, you need a new hashboard, right? You know, and that's all baked into like the investment thesis here. So what we do is, number one, we have a full support team. It kind of, well, think about layers, right? So on like a corporate level, we have a support team that, you know, it's constantly monitoring machines. And then, you know, at any time you can submit a ticket. We don't like outsource this, you know, overseas or anything. You're going to talk to a Blockware employee, right? And then what we do practically speaking is, you know, there's a lot you can do with these machines virtually. You know, we've got a whole team of folks that are boots on the ground in Kentucky, but, you know, we are first, we're going to kind of go through the triage, you know, process. So, you can do a, you know, manual reboot virtually. Then you send a human being over to go inspect the machine and do first one was a virtual reboot. Then there's a manual reboot. Then if we need to, we'll take it down. And then we have a test bench, actually at both of our facilities, and we'll do diagnosis on it. Right. And then most of the, you know, kind of minor to medium potential issues we can fix on site. But if we can't fix it on site, then we facilitate the fixing of that. We've got three different repair providers that we, you know, kind of diversify, you know, machines with. And we execute that on your behalf. Right now, again, in the spirit of complete transparency, this is your machine. Mm-hmm. You own it. We're just like providing the services around it. So, you know, there are costs in the event that there is an issue. But that's the same as if it was running in your garage, right? Mm-hmm. At 2x, you know, energy price. And we're very experienced at this. And we've got relationships where we, you know, over 30 plus megawatts in multiple years, like you build some good relationships and some pretty good economies of scale pricing with repair facilities, right? So, you know, the reality is like, these are computers, right? There is execution risk. That's why it's important that you work with a partner that, you know, is transparent, does have a thoughtful process, you know, and we want to be, you know, partners with our clients to just, we're in a journey together. There's an issue, we're going to help you fix it, right? And if we can't fix it, we're going to help you get that fixed. So that's the real truth. If anybody says, hey, there's never going to be any problem, or, you know, like it's all magic, that's bullshit. Shit happens, right? But we realize that proactively and we help our customers deal with it.
And in terms of the time frame, say, you know, something happens, I notice remotely that it's not hashing out the same rate it was when I first bought it, and I do the reboot, nothing happens, and I want you guys to send out somebody to diagnose it. How long does that take for somebody to facilitate that whole thing?
Yeah. On the virtual, going through the kind of the triage, you know, make this speech shorter. You know, the virtual reboot is like seconds, right? You know, maybe a minute, couple minutes, right? So very, very quick. And that'll catch a lot of issues. If we got to replace a fan, you know, figure like anything that we can do on site is a day, maybe a few days if things are like really backed up. I'm just trying to kind of think about like, you know, kind of worst case scenario, if you will. And then if we've got to send it off site, the way we run our process is weekly or bi-weekly, and it varies a little bit kind of seasonally. You know, you see a little bit as you get into the peak seasons, machines are, you know, expanding, you know, when it gets super hot, you know, or when it gets cold, that's when we see a little bit more issues, just kind of seasonally. Not a huge variance, but, you know, frankly, that's the thing. Send it out. We're in Kentucky. Our primary repair facility is in North Carolina. So that's a, you know, 1 day journey there. Then they diagnose exactly what the issue is. Could be as quick as a day, could be, you know, a week. Then you've got transit on both sides that is like, you know, a day or 2 days. So I'd say just like net, big issues, which is like, you know, a hashboard or multiple hashboards are having an issue, you're looking at like a couple, maybe a few weeks, kind of in a worst case scenario, right? And again, just being transparent, this is, we're working with high power computers that are cranking all times, right?
No, it's totally understandable.
Yeah.
And I have a question then. What if somebody does purchase it and they want to have that equipment sent to them? Is that an option that you provide to people?
Yeah, short answer is yes. So, well, there's a contractual answer and then a like practical answer. So like, and this is where the marketplace is great for our business, right? Like we want churn. That's just, we want, and churn is good because if customers are selling their rigs, they're probably making a profit on that. And that's good for us because it's a more capital efficient growth model for our business, right? It's like the definition of mutually aligned incentives. We're providing the option, but not obligation to sell your rigs, bring in Bitcoin denominated liquidity. That's usually at a profit. Or if it's not, you know, you know, it's your decision to sell your rig. Blake, I'm going to actually have you, if you don't mind, why don't you jump in on that one? I've been talking a lot here.
Yeah, no problem. And it's a good one for me because like I mentioned, I'm an account executive. So I talk to, you know, marketplace users every single day. I think I got asked this question maybe like 3 times a day, probably 20 times this week. So it's a good, you know, I'm a good person to answer it. And the thing is, so you, like I mentioned before, you sign a hosting contract, which is locking in your energy rate for X amount of time. On the marketplace, you have the option of a 1, 2, or 3 year contract. So in the event that you would like to receive your machine physically, you want us to send it to you, that's something that we'll do at the end of your hosting contract. So if you sign a 3 year contract and you mine with us throughout the 3 years, at the end of the 3 years, you say, hey, you know, Bitcoin's rocking. This is profitable for me to plug in my garage with my 14, you know, cent energy price. Well, you just send it to me. And that's absolutely something we'll facilitate. Now, if you signed a 3 year contract and 6 months into it, you were like, hey, you know, I want my machine. Contractually, that's not really something that we support because you signed a, you know, a hosting deal for this amount of time. In that case, you have, of course, have the option to just list your machine for sale on the marketplace. Then you would receive Bitcoin for that. And then you could go out and buy a machine using that Bitcoin for sure. So I think one of the cool things about the marketplace is it enables optionality. So I talk to people all the time who are like, I would really love to run a miner myself. It's just that, you know, where Bitcoin price and difficulty are at right now, and it's, you know, I have 15 cent power at my house, it's not going to be profitable. So what I tell those people is, like, if you're someone who's bullish on Bitcoin, and I'm assuming that, you know, everyone is who's having this conversation or probably is listening to this podcast, if you're someone who thinks that the price of Bitcoin is going to outpace difficulty growth and it's going to be significantly more profitable to mine Bitcoin a year from now, or maybe 2 years from now, sign a 1 year hosting contract, run your machine with us for a year where, you know, your hosting rate is significantly lower than the energy cost of your house. So run it at a hosting facility for a year or two and then take delivery of your machine and plug it in your garage when it's profitable to do so.
What is the energy cost at your locations?
So we charge an 8 cent hosting fee on the marketplace. There's a little bit of variability there with, you know, our what we call like OTC deals. So when we scale the size of deals, it can make sense to you know, be a little bit variable with the hosting rate. But in terms of the marketplace and single unit sales, it's a 8 cent hosting rate.
That's very competitive. Now, I got a few more questions, if you don't mind. I know we're coming up against the 45 minute mark, but there's still a few things I really want to chop off my list here. I'm assuming all your data centers are air-cooled. Is there any thought about moving, transitioning, even offering some immersion / liquid cooling?
I can speak to that one just briefly. Is short answer, yes. We're always looking at optionality. If you look back at like 2021, so this is a function of, you know, CapEx to facilitate. This is a function of CapEx effectively, right? And then how that plays in with regards to current hash price at any given time. So when, you know, an S19J Pro was yielding, again, I'm dollarizing this, but $600 per month in profit, you know, somebody's going to be willing to pay 10, 11, 12 cents per kilowatt hour, or maybe pay. And we would have to do that because the CapEx on, you know, again, because we enable capital efficient mining, right? Our clients don't have to go build the data centers, you know, hire the people, run the facility, so on and so forth. So traditionally speaking, like immersion cooling is more expensive, right? And you can get out of that. Really, the primary benefits are longevity and kind of hardware life. And then you can overclock them a little bit better as well. Now, it's actually kind of interesting that when hash price is lower, you know, 2021, hash price was so high. So I was not concerned about my cost so much on my OPEX basis. I just want to get as much revenue as possible. Now, when hash price is lower, like it is right now, but by the way, machines are like 90% lower price than they were at that point in time, you actually want to control your cost side a little bit more, right? So like the benefit of overclocking, because when you overclock something, you also consume more electricity and thereby raise your cost. But if the spread between, you know, of your, you know, your profit-based spread is super high, then I'm okay taking on a little more cost because I'm just going to try to nuke into that spread as high as I can. Right. So like, I think that we're going to kind of reach, I think we're getting there, you know, a little bit of a peak in a hardware innovation plateau due to, you know, like how sophisticated can you make chips, you know, how microprocessing is. And, you know, you look at like the demand for these artificial intelligence, go look at like what NVIDIA's stock did around their earnings, right? Mm-hmm. $1 trillion company. Maybe not. I don't know if they dip below that, but
it's around there now. It's very, very close.
It's insane, not, right? Yeah. So like everybody's competing for these. So I do think that, you know, where the puck is going is going to be, you know, more innovation from an infrastructure perspective, including things like immersion technology and even like hydro type machines. The hydro machines that are out there right now have not been very impressive, but like it is a good theory because, you know, lower CapEx and the machine cools itself, which is ultimately the objective you want. Long speech, but I think like right now there's not a ton of demand because there would have to be incremental costs associated with it. And when you're in a bear market like this, You want to control your cost side. And frankly, like what we're seeing is we actually are doing more, significantly more transactional volume on a unit basis in this bear market, you know, on a much lower top line, you know, revenue number on a unit basis. And that's because like you can go buy 10 rigs for what used to cost you, you know, 1.5 rigs, right? So it's like, if you think that Bitcoin is going to go up, and if you think that Bitcoin can outpace difficulty, which is just logical because the velocity at which Bitcoin price can move relative to the velocity at which you can go consume gigawatts of power and build massive data centers, you know, and manage geopolitical and counterparty risk on a global scale, you know, that velocity is much higher with Bitcoin price. So it's coming. All right. So we're actually just seeing folks put that money more into purchasing ASICs that are cheap. You're making a profit right now. And then when things start going, you know, you start seeing some more green candles, machine pricing's goes way up. If you own it, now you have liquidity with the marketplace. So I think it's somewhere we may go as an organization, but it's not a significant priority right now.
Gotcha. And just curious, what is the rate right? What is the cost right now per terahash? Is it for the used equipment? Is it somewhere between the $20 to $25 per terahash range? Is that where we're at, or am I out of whack?
Blake, why don't you take that one, man?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty machine dependent. So, you know, certain models are going to have a higher dollar per terahash value versus other models. And, you know, the reason for that is that there's a huge demand for efficiency, right? And there's a huge demand for machines with, you know, high output. So like something like the S19 XP, which is sort of the top of the line in terms of output and efficiency, there's a ton of demand for that machine. So that machine's going to have a higher dollar per terahash value. So, you know, for example, look at Riot Platforms. They bought whatever it was, like 18,000 XPs last year or something like that. Like CleanSpark just bought like 10,000 XPs or something like that. So there's a ton of demand for those machines because they're so efficient and they're so powerful. So because of that, you know, supply and demand, that machine is going to have a higher dollar per T value versus something like the, you know, S9 or maybe the base S19, which is a machine that, you know, looking forward to the 2024 halving is, you know, gearing towards obsolescence. Obviously, everyone knows that the halving's coming up. So, you know, who's going to want to deploy significant amounts of capital for the long term into, you know, that less powerful, less efficient machine? So for that reason, that machine has a lower dollar per T value. So it's really dependent. It's a big range, anywhere from, I don't know, maybe $30 per T all the way down to something like less than $10 per T. So it's really dependent.
Gotcha. And in terms of the firmware, do you guys push? I mean, not really push. Do you recommend people to adopt firmware, something like BrainsOS, to ensure that your equipment is running at the peak efficiency?
I think tech is really cool. We're providing services to a really large group of customers. So we typically, I mean, we don't do a lot of aftermarket type stuff. It's like it's a lame analogy, but if you're what you're doing, I got my iPhone right here, right? Like, yeah, could I make it do some pretty cool stuff if I jailbreak it? And, you know, but then it's like, what happens if we mess something up when we're doing that? Mm-hmm. Or what happens if the firmware pushes a bad update? Like, you know, Len, our business with our customers is about mitigating risk.
Gotcha.
Right? So you can probably squeeze a little more juice out of the, you know, out of the orange, but we'd rather not like, you know, put customers in a situation where there could be a lot of risk. But I think the technology is great. I think that there's going to be a lot of innovation on the infrastructure side and on the, you know, firmware type side, which is going to, because we're eventually like, we're not going to be making, this could be famous last words, but like 1,000 terahash. If you think about the leap from an S9, like 14 terahash to like an XP, 140 terahash. Over a not too long period of time. What's that, Blake? Probably
5 years.
Years, yeah, right? Like that's such a significant percentage efficiency increase, you know, that runs at like basically the same net power draw, right? Like, do I think we're going to get another 1,000x increase in efficiency in 5 years? I don't think the technology is going to exist, right? So like as you look at innovation, and Bitcoin mining is going to always be competitive, I think it'll be in stuff like firmware, you know, infrastructure, you know, but we're a little ways out. So we'll see.
And in terms of the mining pool, I see you're doing 2%. It's the charge is 2% for the mining pool fees. Can you disclose which mining pool you use?
So it's I can tell you it's a Blockware Solutions mining pool. We're partnered with very reputable organization that you probably know and maybe have had on this podcast that we really funnel it into on the back end. I'll kind of leave it there for this one, but very reputable. And, you know, we could certainly go deeper into that. And really, again, like this is, we want consistency across all these variables because we're the more like consistency we have on pool, on, we use Foreman for our miner management software and all this stuff like aggregates, you know, via API pushes in our marketplace, which provides the transparent insights to our customers that are buying and selling on the marketplace. So the more we can do stuff consistently, the better service we can provide to our clients and the more effectively and efficiently we can scale our business. Right. And that's part of the reason we don't say like, use whatever pool you want or bring whatever firmware you want, because it's hard to train people to be experts on, you know, a bunch of different interfaces and a bunch of different firmware. We want to make sure that, you know, we can provide the best service we can. And that comes with making some, you know, strategic decisions and, you know, trade-offs in some ways.
I have one last question, and I want to thank you for staying over time here. We're 10 minutes past our original allotment of time. Intel was initially with a lot of fanfare said they were going to make some mining equipment and they're going to make the chips for mining ASICs moving forward. But then shortly thereafter, they pulled a plug, but they did so after apparently there was a batch that was released. I think Hive got some, and maybe a couple other companies got their hands on them as well. Have you any experience whatsoever with the Intel equipment? Can you share any insight on this? What are your thoughts on the fact that they started this and stopped this? Because to me, it looks like China still has a stranglehold on this market. And I thought it was an awesome decision that Intel was going to do it, because if anybody can do it, shit, it would have been Intel. They have the ability, they have the infrastructure, they have the know-how. And the fact that they pulled out, it was a real bummer. I want to hear your thoughts. Did you touch it? What are your thoughts on this whole, you know, bait and switch type thing? Maybe not bait and switch, but what happened with Intel?
Blake, give your insights on this, because I'd love to hear from you on like, even just a strategic perspective, since you're, you know, very knowledgeable in equities and so on and so forth. But like, I can tell you real quick, Len, that we were having discussions early on with Intel as they were, you know, thinking about this and doing some kind of market studies. I think I agree with you, man. I think like it's a perfect, you know, entity to enter the market. Blake, you know, what do you think? You've probably seen a bunch of this. I can circle back at the end, but you know, what are your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I don't have like, you know, any sort of, you know, groundbreaking insights into kind of what occurred with Intel. I think it was something that, you know, I was excited about for sure, right? For the industry as a whole, right? Having such a reputable, you know, kind of name brand player stepping into the industry was huge. And I personally would speculate that that's something that they're probably still, you know, kind of put in the back pocket. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is something that, you know, next bull run when the price of ASICs is going like crazy, like I'm sure they, you know, would probably be interested in stepping back into the fold. But, you know, of course, I'm just speculating, who the hell knows. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting for the industry that, you know, such a big reputable player is looking into, you know, what's going on and looking to kind of dip their toes into what's going on. And I think it, you know, correlates all the way across industries, like besides from ASIC manufacturers or, you know, chip producers or whatever, like you also look at like energy companies, oil and gas companies looking to kind of dip their toes into the industry and use, you know, excess energy that would otherwise be flared or, you know, whatever the scenario is to kind of earn some yield on their, you know, excess energy. Like there's a ton of different, you know, avenues for Bitcoin and just the industry as a whole, crypto as a whole. There's so many different, you know, paths you can take to kind of, you know, get involved and get some, you know, directional exposure to what's going on. So I think, you know, Intel is a great example in some of these, you know, big oil and gas producers as well. I think it's just great for the industry as a whole that you see, you know, when you look at crypto now, and of course there's, you know, all this sort of FUD in the industry, and there's been, you know, a lot of not so great things happen in the last year where people kind of are scared of crypto again, right? It was, you know, it goes all the way back to like the early days of Bitcoin, where it's, you know, the Silk Road, and everyone's like, oh, well, if you have Bitcoin, it's because you're a, you know, drug dealer or a terrorist or something like that. Like, now people are like, you know, I don't want to get involved with crypto because I think, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried's going to take all my money, right? So it's like when you have a name brand like Intel, for example, who's potentially interested in getting involved in the industry, I think it does a lot for the credibility of the industry as a whole.
Danny, you want to add anything to that? That was a great answer.
You nailed it, man. I think like there's actually not much to it beyond the fact that like that decision was made because it was a super frothy growth business, you know, with a lot of learnings to do. And it's like, okay, we're great, you know, chip manufacturers, we're going to be able to crush this. But I think one, it's not as easy as they maybe thought to some degree. Like there is a little bit of magic to what, you know, companies like Bitmain and, well, I mean, I guess this is a little bit, you know, different part of the machine. You know, so one, it's like, it's not as easy, but I don't think it's much more complicated than the fact that like the market kind of took a shit, you know, for a little while. And if you look at like, you know, Intel stock has actually bounced back pretty well. Like a lot of these, you know, tech and especially, you know, semi companies have done, but like 2022 is not an easy year for them either. So it's like, you know, those kind of moments, you're like, all right, well, the sector is down, and also we're trying to preserve capital. So I think it's a pretty simple, just like, you know, we're not going to do that. I don't even know what that is, but we're conserving our, you know, shekels at this point kind of decision. But I totally agree with Blake. Like 2021 was the year of super bullish, like traditional, whether that's TradFi or companies like Intel, making announcements of like, hey, this thing is legit. That's super validating. I mean, 2020 was the year of, you know, the Michael Saylor, right? MicroStrategy, like a little bit of corporate adoption. You get, you know, El Salvador news. I can't remember if that was 2020 or 2021. These years are all blending together now. But like that's coming back, right? I mean, and where I think it's a little off topic now, but I'll kind of leave it with this, you know, with regard to this question is where I personally think we are going to start to see some, you know, like traditional enterprise, you know, public adoption. And maybe it's not public super yet, but it's already, you know, it's going to happen underneath the covers is like in the TradFi space, you know, companies like BlackRock, Fidelity, Citadel, just like moving major waves, you know, underwater, because traditionally, like the smart money, which I hate that term and I'm a diehard Bitcoiner, like they win because they buy stuff when there's blood in the streets. And, you know, so I think that will kind of start like the traditional bull market, if you will, on the back of a, you know, strengthening macroeconomic landscape, which we are generally moving towards. The question is the velocity in which we can move there. And then it's like, okay, Intel comes back in, right? Or, you know, AMD is making, you know, they're doing a bunch in AI. Why not come here? So it's going to happen. It's just like these tough times. These are times to build.
Right?
And this is like when you can buy ASICs for 90% discount, or you can buy Bitcoin for, I don't know, man, $25,000. Like these are blessed days, right? We're going to look back at this and be like, holy shit. I bought some rigs off the Blockware marketplace for $1,400 USD, and now they're worth $6,000. Not investment advice. I'm just kind of spitballing with you here. Exciting times that we're heading to, I think.
And they're the only legitimate printing machines, money printing machines out there. Everything else is illegitimate. So, gentlemen, we're past an hour. I just want to thank you so much. But before we sign off, I want to pass the baton to each of you. And you could just talk about where people could find you, what's going on, and you can just talk about whatever you want. So I'm going to go reverse order this time. We're going to go with Danny first and then to Blake. So Danny, the baton's over to you.
All right, cool. Yeah. So I don't have quite the Twitter presence that Blake has here, but you can find me on Twitter, Danny Condon, 1989. You can shoot me an email, Danny at BlockwareSolutions.com. You know, and check out, I'd say one thing is, you know, we're always interested in just having conversations with interested parties. And if that's just, we, you know, provide some insights, great. If we can, you know, help you accomplish some objectives, that's great too. So feel free to reach out to, you know, myself or Blake, or you can, you know, just come front door through the website. You'll probably end up talking to Blake anyways. So, but yeah, appreciate you having us on, Len.
Thank you. Blake, over to you, brother. Where can people find you? What's going on with you? The floor is yours.
Yeah. So my Twitter is BlakeDavis50. So you can, you know, go shoot me a DM there if you want to learn some more. I'm, you know, happy to talk to people in the space. I, you know, do it every day. I love talking to new people, new perspectives, you know, regardless of whether or not you're looking to go buy an ASIC. You know, I'd love to talk about mining. I love to kind of educate people in the space. So, you know, definitely go check me out on Twitter and shoot me a DM if you're interested. In terms of the marketplace, if you want to go check it out, you know, of course, no obligation to go do anything, but you can go check it out, view all the listings, kind of see everything we were talking about. It's marketplace.blockwaresolutions.com. If you create an account, I'm going to get sent an email and I'm going to reach out to you about getting you set up anyway. So, you know, kind of a win-win, I guess.
Well, you're in good hands if you do that. So, gentlemen, appreciate you coming on. And for everybody else watching and listening, we'll be back to work on Monday again. So with that, take care and PB.
Cheers.
Thanks for having us.